How do you honor God? By doing everything to the glory of God. Not just not sinning, not just, okay, you don't steal from people, but by making good shoes.
If we're going to talk about you were a new creation, that means everything has to change.
Why does God not just, you know, bring people to heaven immediately after being saved? It's because there's stuff to do here. There's a point to all of this. And if we're Christians, we do it better, or at least in theory.
But if we really apply the standard that's set in Scripture, then we know that no one is good because no one is God.
We serve a storyteller. We serve a God who has a perfect plan, a sovereign will for every moment of history.
It's not about going into the world to make artists. It's about going into the world to make disciples.
This is The Christian Artist, honoring Christ through creativity. My name is Caleb.
My name is Carly.
And we are back with another episode. And today is not one I've been looking forward to. Because today we are continuing our series on, we're watching through the Studio Ghibli films in chronological, like, release order. And we are at Grave of the Fireflies today, which is about this, as at least of the ones we've watched so far, the saddest by far.
Mm-hmm.
Do not watch this film unless you are ready for tears.
Yeah.
So this is the first one that we've been reviewing that is not directed or written by Miyazaki.
Oh, great. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So this is Isao. Come on. College Japanese, don't fail me now. How do I pronounce this name? Isao Takahata, I think is how you pronounce that name. So that's the director and writer. And it came out in 1988. It's an animated war tragedy film. That's how it's described here. That's accurate. It's set in the city of Kobe, Japan. In June 1945, it tells the story of two siblings and war orphans, Saita and Setsuko, and their desperate struggle to survive during the final months of the Second World War. Universally acclaimed, Grave of the Fireflies has been ranked as one of the greatest war films of all time and is recognized as a major work of Japanese animation, which I believe. This certainly seems to have a lot of, like, more than any other film in the Ghibli list here, some major cultural baggage and impact, which makes sense. You know, it's a film about World War II, and it was devastating. I think that's probably the best word to use for it. Just devastating, especially for us having a young child now.
Yeah.
pretty much the whole time we were just thinking about, oh no, what if this happened to our child? Oh no, sadness.
It was. Being pregnant again and having all of those hormones, I cried a lot.
I don't think I cried, but it was certainly emotionally devastating. I choked up several times. So it's originally based on a short story, which I didn't know, by Akiyuki Nosaka, it's by the same name, Grave of the Fireflies. So I'll have to check that out at some point. I wonder if there's an English translation of that one. Looks like it's a semi-autobiographical short story.
Oh, that's depressing.
By the Japanese author. So the plot basically follows these two siblings trying to survive the end of World War II. And before we get into, like, you know, the plot and spoilers and stuff, this definitely is a film that just made me think a lot about, and this is something I think about a lot just in general, given how much I really appreciate Japanese culture and history and, have enjoyed, learning about that stuff. And this is a really important moment for Japan. And I think it's really beautifully and tragically depicted in Grave of the Fireflies. It basically just shows the horrors of war, especially for the innocent, right? For people who have absolutely no, like, they shouldn't be taking, what's the phrase I'm looking for? They're innocent of anything in this war, of everything in this war. So they don't deserve the stuff that's happening to them, right? It's the tragedy of war, depicting people, not even just like this, you know, the carnage of the actual war, but what it does to a country. When, you know, you have war rations and firebombing and the sort of modern warfare that really just destroys, and it's just not, for one, it's not anything like pre-modern warfare. The age of machines has given rise to an incredible deadliness and horrors untold before this era. And it's certainly a good depiction of that, especially, you know, from the viewpoint of children who really should not be, they don't deserve for any of this to be happening to them. I don't know if you have any like, broad thoughts before we dig into specifics, but.
I don't know.
General emotional impact or.
Yeah, I really liked how the film, it wasn't like, it was clear that that was the message it was trying to get across, but it wasn't like, it didn't feel like propaganda in any way. It was not like, look at what America did to us. It was more like, this is the reality of war, and yes, like, this was done to us, but...
Most of the antagonists of the film isn't the faceless Americans, it's right. The Japanese adults that are treating the children poorly, right?
Yeah, a lot of it is, like this is what war does in general, with, you know, foreign armies attacking civilians, as well as civilians turning against one another. I feel like there's a lot of, and I haven't seen like a ton of war movies, but I feel like the majority of the American made ones that I've seen are, and somewhat rightfully so, are like, this is this horrible country we were fighting against, and we won, go us, and everything. And like, everything we did was justified, stuff like that. As opposed to, this film was like, not trying to villainize America necessarily, even though they could have easily done that. And that clearly like comes through in some way. But it wasn't shoved down your throat.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, a lot of the plot and the character development and stuff is moved forward very subtly. A lot of stuff that I didn't even pick up on, until like, you know, a few scenes after the thing they had tried to imply. You know, they have a lot of, the story is told a lot through visuals and through subtle dialogue that isn't quite actually coming right out and saying what they're implying. You know, all the conversations with the aunt, very passive aggressive, very, it's not entirely clear. It's clear that she doesn't like them, but it's not entirely clear, unless you're paying attention, what she's actually doing to them, right? Like, the actual, the horrible way she's actually treating them in all of its details. And, you know, stuff like that. There's a lot of really, and that's really what this, I think this film does the best, is there's so many good small moments. That's what the film is best at, is these small moments with great visuals, a great poignant moment between the siblings that's just showcasing their relationship and showcasing the horrors of war, but not in a in-your-face, like, there's only a couple of scenes that are, like, firebombs raining from the sky or anything like that, right? Most of it is, like, slow attrition and malnutrition and trying to scrounge for survival. Yeah. You know, like, the scenes I'm thinking about is, like, for one, the scene with the ice, you know, the block of ice that got sawed into by a merchant or someone passing by. I can't remember exactly why they were sawing into the ice, but there's these ice shavings that kind of fall down from this ice on this wagon. And he just, you know, his sister is super is suffering from malnutrition, and he just wants to like cheer her up and give her something to put down, to put in her stomach, put on her lips. And so he reaches down and grabs these little ice shavings and gives it to his sister and tells her it's ice cream. And just something as simple as that, it's not in your face. It's not it's saying so many things. It's doubling, tripling, quadrupling up on character moments in a way that's really efficient and really poignant. Yeah, so plot, right? We'll get into some spoilers here. It's basically just a slow descent into tragedy, right? The brother and sister and their mother, their father is in the Navy, they're Japanese citizens. And there's some firebombing that's happening in their city. Their mother gets killed in the firebombing, and they end up having to stay with their aunt. Their aunt hates them, it considers them basically freeloaders, and eventually, like, slowly and passive aggressively pushes them out of the house. And eventually they find their way to an abandoned mine where they kind of set up shop and try to survive on their own. And things are okay for a while, but they just don't have, you know, things get tighter and tighter. The Japanese are losing the war, right? So things are getting more and more desperate and dire for everyone. And so there's just not stuff to buy anymore, right? They don't have food. They don't have a way to get food. And slowly the sister dies. The brother cremates her, and then the end of the movie is him dying as like an orphan in the streets, because his father died in the war at some point during the movie. Mm-hmm. And it's just a tragedy, right? Like, that's what the story is. But throughout the whole thing, right, the kind of thematic through line is fireflies, right? You know, the movie's called Grave of the Fireflies. And at one point in the movie, the sister, Setsuko, asks her brother, like, why do fireflies die so quickly, right? Like, why do they live so short lives and die so quickly? And I can't remember exactly his answer. I think it was probably some sort of, like, I don't know, or trying to, you know, distract her from the actual answer. Mm-hmm. But that question is really at the heart of this film. It's the tragedy of children's lives, right, being snuffed out way too quickly, having too short of lives, being, you know, they're burning brightly, right? There's moments throughout the film where these children are loving life, enjoying life, enjoying each other as siblings, you know, making the most of their situation, laughing, and those are those moments where the fireflies are dancing, right? They're burning brightly in the night, and then the next day they're dead, and you don't really know what happened. And that's basically the whole thematic through line. Was there anything else that about the, like, the plot that kind of stood out to you as interesting or notable?
Not sure.
One of the fun framing devices is they actually start with the brother dying. You don't really, I don't think you realize it exactly. I certainly didn't, because I'm the sort of person who likes to go along with the movie and not try to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, I think I kind of put it together because it shows him holding the tin of candy.
Yeah.
That. And I think you see at the very beginning scene that it has ashes of some sort in it. Yep. And then obviously by the end of the movie, you realize, oh, it's his sister's ashes that's in the candy tin.
Yeah. For me, I don't think I realized he died. Like, I knew it was him, but
I think he literally the movie started out with him saying, like, this is my name and, like, this is how I died or something. Mm.
You know what? You're right.
it may not have given his name, but he literally voiced something about him dying.
It's one of those things where I just kind of like willfully ignored the beginning of it. And because I was trying to piece together what was happening at the beginning of the film. But yeah, by the end you realize, it was him, and he ends up dying too. Because, you know, his father had died. So it's not like there was anything for him to go back to or go to in the future. So yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where like, if all movies are like this, that's not good. But I think it's good to have movies like this, right? Mm-hmm. And this is one of the things
that's like, it's based on historical events.
Yeah.
So, you know, going into it, the Japanese don't win this war. Like theoretically these kids could have a happy ending, but like, it's not,
we know Japan doesn't have a happy ending.
Yeah. So you know that it's going to be really hard.
Yeah, this movie is a good example of something that I think Christians have a harder time with. And it's the idea that everything needs to end with like a resurrection or something, right? Mm-hmm. Like that every story has to end with a happy ending or at least some hope of resurrection or something like that. And it just doesn't, like, so this is the thing, right? Like, if we're looking at the grand cosmic story, of course that's what it ends with, right? But when you zoom in to any individual story, it could have a happy ending, it could have a sad ending. And it could have, because of where the story begins and ends, it could have a sad ending for now and a happy ending after we finish the story. Or it could have a bad ending after we finish the story. But you know, you look at the Bible has stories like this, where there is no hope by the end of the story. Like, if we're just taking that one story in isolation, it starts maybe okay and it gets worse and then it's sad and everybody dies. Mm-hmm. That's the story, because that's what actually happens in God's world. Those sorts of stories happen. Now, again, that doesn't mean that that's the final story, right? That's the final ending of all stories. But when you take an individual story, it can have a sad ending. That's okay. It can even have an ending where, like, the villains get away with it, right? That can be an ending that exists in God's world. It's an ending that did exist in the Bible. There are plenty of stories where that's what happened. But then when you zoom out, then, yeah, of course, everybody gets cosmic justice in the end. But that's not what all stories can't be that, right? All stories can't be the whole story. They have to be pieces of the story.
Yeah. I pulled up the screenplay just to see what the actual first line of the movie is. And it's literally, it's him narrating. It says, in 1945, on the night of September 21st, I died. So, you know, going into the movie, like, okay, one of the main characters is going to die. Like, that's... it's kind of funny that it opens up with that, though, because obviously the, like, main tragic plot point of the movie is the sister dying, and then you end it with him eventually dying. But like, you come into the movie being like, oh no, this person's dying, and then you go through the whole story of like how he got there, and you're like, oh, someone else died too.
Yeah,
a lot worse than the original thought.
You could probably end the story with him living and it would still be tragic and sad. But I mean, the story is about the lives, like the actual end of the story isn't, him dying and that's it. It's actually the credits where they reunite together and watch the fireflies. Right. Mm-hmm. So in theory, it's a happy ending because they're reunited in death. You know, if they weren't Christians, they weren't actually reunited in death, but that's neither here nor there. Right. It's okay to tell the story. And from a Christian perspective, we can see that and be like, yes, the hope of resurrection actually is true. Mm-hmm. And
or they're not,
it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy for children to die in this world. But if they're if they're regenerate, if they're saved, if God is merciful to them, then they can, you know, reunite in the resurrection, not only with each other, but with their family members and so on and so forth. That's great. So there's not a whole lot to talk about setting here because it's not a fantastical setting. It's just... Mm-hmm. Japan in 1945. But let's talk about the characters. Anything in particular jump out to you immediately about Saita or Setsuko?
Um, I don't know. Ghibli has, and obviously this is a different director, but Ghibli has a very prominent type of how they portray little girls. And they were definitely consistent with that in this movie. And they're very good at portraying kids. And I think especially young girls, as just like this, this like innocence, but still like, the love for sweets that's like not necessarily innocent, like it is, but in a way that's like, oh yeah, sweets aren't actually proper nutrition like this girl needs, but her brother's still like trying to get those for her because she loves them. I don't even know what I'm trying to form a thought, and it's not happening.
I don't know where you're going with it, so I can't help you.
Yeah. The little girl in this movie very much fits the image that most of the other Ghibli films make of a young girl, especially this young. Like,
yeah.
Obviously, Nausicaa and the girl in Castle in the Sky are much older. It's not the same archetype there, but
I think the little girl from Totoro fits the stereotype. They're similar characters.
Yeah. There's just a very like whimsical innocence to them of like. Yeah, noticing things in nature, like the fireflies and everything. There's lots of scenes in this movie where the little girl is just, like, interacting with bugs and stuff. And especially since the little mine that they set up camp in is, like, right next to, a river or a creek or something. So there's lots of that imagery there.
Yeah, I really do like the whole sequence where they're at the mine. I think it's it's really charming. And especially because of the kind of oppressive home atmosphere they're at in with the aunt, it's certainly a victory for them.
Yeah.
When they get to go to the mine, like you feel that freedom.
It seems almost idyllic, even though like they're technically sleeping outside under a mosquito net, and like it's not the ideal situation, but it's much better than where they were before, because at least they're able to kind of fend for themselves without anyone overshadowing them and talking.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like an adventure at first for them.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And that's part of that little girl archetype of like, she's just having fun, like living her life. Like she doesn't really understand what's happening around her. She's just seeing all of the little things and appreciating them. Whereas the older brother is trying to cultivate that for her, cultivate that kind of fantasy world for her while trying to keep them alive. It's that like, this little girl doesn't have any responsibilities for herself yet. And so she's just kind of going with the motions of everything and legitimately appreciating everything around her, because she doesn't have anything really to complain about, even though she has so many things to complain about. She just doesn't really know it.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like the dynamic between them. It's a classic older brother looking out for his younger sister.
Yeah.
But especially in a situation like this, you need that sort of thing. Like it would have been more tragic if it had been like two girls having to fend for themselves or something, or even just an older sister having to fend for herself and her younger brother. but since it's an older brother, you know that like he at least has some strength on his side. He's like, I think he's supposed to be like 15 or something, right? So he has some strength to him. He has some vigor to him. He can do things. He can accomplish things. He can actually protect his sister in a meaningful way. And which I guess it's maybe more tragic than that he can't save him in a sense.
Yeah.
But I think it would have been harder to watch an older girl go through the same thing. So I'm glad that they didn't do that, at least.
the mental fortitude would not have been the same throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
I don't think, obviously it's possible. And
it makes it more poignant when he does actually break down, right?
Exactly. Like, obviously it's possible for women to be that mentally strong in situations like that, especially when they have to, but it's much more realistic to see a male in that role where, you know, he's like, this is what I have to do, so I just got to push through it. And then when he finally does break down, it's like, well, yeah, saw that coming, because he, you know, pushed through for so long without facing the reality of what was happening.
Yeah, for sure. I think the film does a fantastic job of making you absolutely hate the aunt.
Yeah.
Really well-written villain. She doesn't have to be overtly and explicitly against them. All she has to do is slowly and surely cut them out of her family's life, right? She continues to make comments about them being freeloaders, but never comes right out and says it. It's just like backhanded comments whenever they're around, forcing them, you know, constantly pushing him to write letters. Try to write a letter to his father so that they can go to him. The whole thing where, like, you have to sell your mother's clothing, and then when they do, she takes half of the rice they bought they buy with it, forcing them to go get the mother's money they still have in the bank and buy their own food. And then even then, it's not enough, and they just feel like they have to leave. By the end, you just despise the aunt because, I mean, ultimately the aunt is responsible for their deaths, and she was their, she's their family. She, it's her like biblical responsibility to look out for them, as the only family that they had, like that they could actually go to. And like the fact that she literally just pushed them out, it makes her culpable for their deaths.
Yeah.
Right. Like if that woman existed in real life, she would be in hell for that. wicked. Mm-hmm. But it's not explicit, right? It's very subtle, very well portrayed, very realistic. And then, I mean, the whole sequence with them stealing from the farmers and getting beat up by the farmer, and like, ugh, so intense, so tragic. But yeah, I think they did a really good job with the antagonism of the film. Because it's not just them slowly surviving, like, the environment. It's them having to survive people, too, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, the American firebombing is part of the main thing that, like, made them lose their home and their mother in the first place. So you have that kind of hanging over everything, too.
But that's not the main threat that's trying to kill them the entire time.
Yep. It's their neighbors who are scared, right? And again, just the tragedy of war is on full display here. It's very interesting looking through the themes and analysis section of this article. The director, I think it's the director. The director has denied it's an anti-war film. like explicitly an anti-war film, right? Let me look at this again. In his own words, it is not at all an anti-war anime and contains absolutely no such message. Instead, Takahata had intended to convey an image of the brother and sister living a failed life due to isolation from society and invoke sympathy, particularly in people in their teens and 20s. I think that succeeds, right? Like, that's definitely what I got from that more than anything else, right? Because as we mentioned, the American firebombing, like the threat of America, isn't the problem, really. Yeah. Right? It's the inciting incident. But the actual antagonists are adults who aren't taking care of these children, especially their family members, right? That aren't caring for them. So yeah, I think that that makes total sense to me. It certainly obviously has lots of stuff to say about war. It looks like the director was nevertheless an anti-war advocate. Like he himself is.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Is that way. He didn't mean necessarily, but obviously that's going to bleed over into the film that he's directing, right? Let's see. Despite the public's emotional reaction, Takahata expressed that the purpose of the film was not to be a tragedy or make people cry. He said that his decision to show the audience that Saita and Setsuko had passed away at the beginning of the movie is to protect the audience from heartbreak. If an audience knows at the beginning of the film that the two will eventually die, they're more prepared to watch the film in the first place. I was trying to lessen an audience's pain by revealing everything at the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's, I feel like it certainly would have been more tragic if we hadn't known going in.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's fair enough. There's an interesting section about the fireflies here. The fireflies in the film are portrayed as symbols of various themes, such as the spirits of the lost children, the fires that burned the towns, Japanese soldiers, the machinery of war, and the regeneration of life through nature. Let's see. Now, the movie uses fireflies to visually represent both deadly and beautiful imagery, such as firebombs and kamikazes. Takahata chooses to use the kanji fire instead of the normal character for the word firefly in the title, which has been interpreted to represent the widespread burning of wooden houses in Japan. Mm. That's interesting. But yeah, I mean, not only is there the thematic stuff that I was talking about, but the idea of the firebombs themselves, right? Certainly similar imagery. All in all, it's a very beautiful film. I would highly recommend it. It's something you definitely want to be prepared for going into it. You know, you don't want it to jump at you and make you cry. But sometimes you need a good cry, you know? I really liked it a lot. Especially as a parent, it hits a lot harder. So. Anything we want to talk about in terms of cultural considerations, like, you know, Japanese versus American culture, animation, gender roles, any of the normal stuff we talk about with these films? I think we've touched on some of this.
I mean, just already. Touching on the ant, the gender roles, that very much showed how destructive women can be with their words and how they choose to run their home, because she was like the least hospitable person that they could have portrayed in a time where these kids really needed a hospitable person.
And very true. Yeah, she was going against her femininity there.
Yeah. Like she was taking care of her own children.
Yeah.
But she was doing it in a way that was literally ended up killing these family members of hers.
Family members. Yeah, it's not just random kids on the street, right?
Yeah. Like she had a real obligation to these kids. It wasn't just like, oh, these kids.
And even besides that, like,
you should be taking care of them.
As like a human being, right? You have obligations to people.
Yes.
And like if she had had to help them in a way that would have literally killed her own family, that's one thing. But that didn't seem to be the case. It just seemed like she was I'm trying to think of the right phrase here. She was being unnecessarily protective of her family's resources. Mm-hmm. It especially with the money that they had and what's the word here? The resources that they had, like the resources that the kids had, right? That the brother and sister had, if they had just like been smart, pooled together the resources, all worked together as a family.
Yeah.
I'm sure they would have been fine, right? Yeah.
Instead, the aunt made sure that her family had plenty and that the brother and sister had barely enough to live on.
Yeah, very sad. But again, you know, great villain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there are, you know, a lot of other good minor characters, such as the police officer, the farmer that they're trading with. Lots of good character moments between all of them. And we already mentioned the gender role kind of dynamic between the brother and the sister. So I don't know if there's anything else to talk about in with that. This will probably end up being a shorter episode than than the other ones, especially because there's not a whole lot of world building stuff to talk about here, right? Yeah. It's just Japan. I mean, we could probably go on a rant about war, but we don't necessarily have to do that. I think I've mentioned any of the interesting behind the scenes stuff I found here. Really beautiful visuals. The animation isn't like my favorite animation style. Especially the people, like they're sometimes it's not. Maybe it lends itself to it, right? The people aren't as depicted as beautifully as some other anime, but that might be part of the point.
I think in. I gotta look at some of the artwork again, but I think I'd say Grave of the Fireflies is more like simplistic in line art.
Yeah.
Than some of the other animation styles. Whereas like there aren't a whole lot of like embellishing lines, like it's mainly just like, okay, here's the character's clothes, and you know, enough to like show movement and show their facial expressions, but it's not they're not trying to portray the characters as beautiful or like particularly what's the word I'm looking for, like charismatic or anything. Yeah. Like whereas a lot of the other movies are very focused on showing a lot more about the characters through the actual animation and the motion and everything, versus I think this one was more about what was happening to them and how they were dealing with it.
Yeah, this animation style reminds me of Only Yesterday, which is one
that's a little here. Bit. Yeah. Yep. It's kind of the in between.
Similar faces.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean looking at the artwork for this movie, their eyes are literally just like a couple lines and a circle for the pupils. They're not super detailed compared to like, you know, other characters have an eye color. So this one was definitely more simplistic.
Any last thoughts as we kind of wrap up here? It's just kind of one of those things where you just kind of have to experience it. There's probably more we could talk about with all the like imagery and symbolism and stuff, but a lot of it's pretty straightforward. We've mentioned a lot of it already. It's definitely a film you could watch multiple times and get more like thematic kind of symbolism out of, like the fireflies and the, you know, the candy tin and all the kind of images that, one scene I definitely wanted to mention that was really powerful was the, just like the actual death scene of, the sister, how like as it's coming, as we're leading up to the death, all of these, she is like constantly trying to look out for him, even as he's trying to save her life, basically. But she once she actually goes down this path and is starting to get delirious and stuff, her only thought is, here, I have to help my brother. And right, the last thing we really get from her is Saita comes back to the mine where they're staying, And she has gathered up a bunch of rocks and she basically says, look, brother, I found some rice balls. Like, we have food. We have rice balls. And he just starts crying and then gives her some watermelon. Like, you know, here, I actually got some food. Like, can you, but it's already too late, right? She eats a little bit of it. But when he wakes, when they go to sleep and then he wakes up, she's dead. She's gone. Just so poignant, so sad.
Yeah.
The sort of thing that I can definitely imagine a child that young doing, right? Because there's way less understanding as to what's actually happening, right? And so the only thing she can think is, oh, there's something that looks like a rice ball. I guess it's a rice ball. Hey, brother, we found the rice balls.
Especially right? since this whole time her brother was showing her this is how you take care of someone by how he was taking care of her. And so she's like, oh, if I can return the favor, that'd be great. Cause he's my brother and I love him and I'm trying to take care of him too. And so she's like trying to find any way to do that.
Yep. Very sad, very devastating, heartbreaking film, that we highly recommend.
Yes.
And you should watch for yourself at least once.
As long as you're prepared to cry.
Yeah. You don't have to become a glutton for punishment and watch it over and over again, but you should definitely give it a chance.
I would totally be fine with never watching it again, even though it was an amazing movie.
Yeah. I'll probably watch it again at some point, but
yeah,
I don't necessarily, what am I saying? I'll have to be in a particular mode where I'll be okay with crying. So maybe next time I'm sick or something, I'll just be like, yeah, I'll just make myself miserable. Let's go. Cool. So let's see what's next on our list here. Studio Ghibli. I'll have to check out that original short story. Cause that would be interesting to read. Let's see. Studio Ghibli. Oh man, there's going to be 22 episodes of this series. What are we doing here? Oh, it's My Neighbor Totoro next.
Okay.
Cool. Yep, a classic. Lots of people who haven't seen any other Ghibli film have seen Totoro. It's a very classic slice of life Japanese anime film. Oh, and then we got Kiki's. I kind of want to watch Kiki's again. That'd be a fun one. Some of these we watched a while a couple months ago when we started watching these, and have just watched recaps on YouTube before we do the episode, instead of watching the whole movie again in the span of 2 months. But that one I might want to watch again. We'll see. All right, cool. If you're interested in any other of the episodes of this podcast or just any of the other things that we do here on Twitch or the YouTube or wherever else I do stuff on the internet, you can find all that in the liner notes. This will go on YouTube and we'll also have... live streams... live stream next week, same bat time, same bat channel. You can find, I usually tweet out when we're doing episodes on Twitter. I guess it's called X now, but I don't think anyone wants to call it that. But I guess I also post on Facebook and YouTube when these are going live, so you can catch them there as well. And if you're interested in the community, you can check out the Discord. Discord is in the liner notes as well. All the links to all the things are in the liner notes. So you can check out the Discord, come chat with us in there. We have a film section in the Discord. So if you want to talk more about Grave of the Fireflies, feel free. We can all cry together. It'll be great. All right. This is it for the Christian Artist for now, but we'll see you next time. Thanks for watching. Adios. Adios.